Welcome to Private Club Radio, your weekly source for industry education, news and discussion. Broadcasting from Tampa, Florida, ladies and gentlemen, here is your host, Gabriel Aloisi.
Does your club have a long-range capital plan? Find out why you need one and how you go about putting one together. We're going to be chatting with Eric Gregory of Blueprint Club Consulting today, and it's going to be a fantastic learning experience for all you managers out there who need to know how to fund your club into the future and how to make sure that your capital needs are met to have a plan. I just got back from beautiful Princeton, New Jersey area. I want to give a shout out to Dan Schmitz of KE Camps. He was a wonderful, wonderful host. Took me out to his beautiful club there in the Princeton area, Cherry Valley Country Club. I played with his buddies' clubs and shot 80, so I was really excited for that. I didn't know what to expect, but the clubs were pretty good, and they let me borrow an Epic driver, which is my driver of choice at the Pro Shop. So shout out to the Cherry Valley Country Club Pro Shop for letting me do that. And we just had a great time. It's a Reese Jones course, just a beautiful layout. And what I liked about it was challenging enough. Like, it wasn't overly difficult, but it wasn't a cakewalk either. And it was a really good time. I had three birdies with someone else's club, so I was pretty happy about that. Dan played really well as well. He shot his best round ever, at least tied his best round ever. So it was good to see him do that. I also got a tour of the Beacon Hill Club in Summit, New Jersey, and what a beautiful club that is, really unique. They've got a hockey program, outdoor hockey rink, which you don't see at very many places, and that was really cool as well. So I want to thank them for hosting us over at Beacon Hill. My time is short today as I am headed to Los Angeles, going to visit the Riviera Country Club and Bel Air Country Club, and I'm really excited for that. I'm going to tell you a lot more about that when I return and give you my feedback on if Malcolm Gladwell was right or not. I don't know if you've heard that podcast, but if you haven't, you probably should. It's a podcast that for a long time I've really admired, and I admire Malcolm Gladwell. Been reading his books, I admire the guy in general. But his recent podcast, Revisionist History, in episode one of the most recent season, he took a stab at country clubs and especially the ones out in Los Angeles and really shed a bad light on the industry. And so while I'm going to be out there anyways, I figured I'm going to do a little of my own research and maybe present you with the other side of the story, which I'm sure you'd love to hear. And hopefully that message can get out to some other folks out there. So if you actually haven't listened to that episode, again, episode one of season two of Revisionist History, I'm pretty sure the title is A Good Walk Spoiled. Go check that one out and that'll get your blood boiling for the day. At any rate, it is time to bring on our featured guest, Eric Gregory. My guest today is Eric Gregory, CCM. He's the founder and president of Blueprint Club Consulting. He's a certified club manager. He's been 20 years in the club management business. He had 10 years as a general manager and COO, including the San Gabriel Country Club in San Gabriel, California, Claremont Country Club in Oakland, the Los Angeles Country Club, the California Yacht Club, and Center Club in Costa Mesa, as well as Santa Ana Country Club in Santa Ana, California. He's an adjunct professor at Collins College, Cal Poly Pomona in the Advanced Club Management. Eric, welcome to Private Club Radio. It's so good to have you here.
Gabe, thank you so much for letting me be on your show. I have to tell you, I was recently introduced to your program, and last week I downloaded your mobile app, and I've been listening on my morning jogs, and I've really enjoyed every one of the conversations.
Very cool. I'm so happy you were able to join us and you reached out to me on LinkedIn. And I thought that you would have something excellent to say to our listeners because I've been following your posts there in LinkedIn. And they're very engaging. Love the articles that you're writing over there.
We've got some important things to talk about today, Gabe.
That's right. So the subject matter is going to be long-range capital planning. And the first thing I want to start off with you, Eric, is, you know, you're working with clubs all across the country and you're probably coming up against some common issues out there. So what out there do you think that's happening a lot in clubs, Eric?
Well, it's a good question, Gabe, and I think you're absolutely right. There are some commonalities that we run into when we engage with clubs. And I think one of the first things that we find is that clubs don't really understand their true capital costs. I think that clubs may have some ideas and they may work 1 year, sometimes 2 years, 3 years out, but they really haven't done the work to determine what the costs of their current capital assets are going to be and what the costs of their future improvement projects are going to be. So that's certainly one of the common issues that we run into. And I think also more common, Gabe, is that clubs really, for the most part, have not identified a funding strategy to be able to make sure that they have the funds available to pay for those costs when the needs arise. And so they wind up just doing, you know, assessments and taking out debt without really looking at their long-range capital planning needs. And so I think those are two of the big issues that we find.
Yeah. And, you know, when you start to think about long-range capital planning, there's a couple things that you need to establish right from the get-go. Can you tell our listeners what those things are, Eric?
Absolutely, Gabe. I think that the first thing that I would recommend before even doing any engaging in capital planning is, number one, is to start with a zero-based budget philosophy. And I think that the managers that are listening today will probably have undergone that process in their club's operating budget. And essentially, they're starting with the zero base, meaning they're not taking last year's results or last year's expenses and putting a small percentage increase on that. They're justifying every expenditure and making sure that it has a value proposition for their club. So on the capital level, I would strongly suggest that as an exercise, don't start with what are we currently charging our members in the forms of capital dues or initiation fees. Start with what are our funding requirements, and then start to build from there and determine if you can make adjustments. Right. And then the second one, Gabe, is really to understand your club's mission. And it sounds very simple, but in reality is sometimes what we find with clubs is that their budget is the driver and the mission gets compromised to try to meet the budget. And I think sometimes clubs and leaderships of clubs need to step back and say, what's our mission? And do we have a budget that supports success of that mission?
Yeah, absolutely. So are you finding that the mission is something that clubs really have a good grasp of, or is it something that they need to work through in the beginning there?
Well, I think that most clubs have undergone a strategic planning process, Gabe. And I think that, you know, if you went and you looked at a club and you looked at their mission statement, sometimes they're fairly vague, but for the most part, most clubs out there want to be the premier recreational facility in their area. They want to have the best golf course. They want to have the best dining facilities. Some clubs want to be more focused around family activities. And whatever the mission is, the budget needs to be supported to do it exceptionally well to be in a premier market.
Yeah. So once you've got you know your club's mission, you've got that zero-based budget philosophy, then you can actually get into the steps, it sounds like. So what are some of the first steps when you're starting to think about long-range capital planning, Eric?
Gabe, I think the first thing that clubs need to do is make sure that they identify their current capital expenditures. And every club, for example, an 18-hole golf club should expect somewhere between 350 and 600 capital assets that are going to need to be replaced at some point. Mm-hmm. And so the best way to do that is to commission a capital reserve study. And it's unfortunate that most clubs have not done this at this point, Gabe, and I know that this is increasing. In fact, I recently read that in the 2016 Private Club Economic Impact Report, that recently just came out, median operating revenue since 2014, so just in a two-year period, has increased by 6.9%.
Wow.
And median capital income has increased by 29%. Mm-hmm. So a huge increase in capital revenue. And so what that says is that clubs are starting to come around in understanding the importance of funding capital. But at the same time, if you don't understand your capital assets and have a replacement cost scheduled out over the next 10 or 20 years, you're going to wind up getting the creep of deferred maintenance, and that's going to come back to bite the club in the end.
Yeah, that's scary. That's really scary. what are some firms that you'd recommend in terms of doing these capital reserve studies?
Well, without sounding too, you know, commercial here, Gabe, there are a lot of firms out there, and I've seen some very good ones. I've seen some very bad ones. I will tell you the one that I used as a club manager was Paul Mueller from Club Capital Partners. Mm-hmm. I think that he really understands the industry, the equipment. He does the work himself, and he schedules out over 20 years and provides a database that's editable and usable that the club can update every year.
Mm-hmm. Perfect. Perfect. Well, let's move on to the second point on your list of really eight things that clubs need to put in place in order to think long-term here in terms of their capital. What's number two on that list, Eric?
Number two, Gabe, would be to identify the club's next 3 to 4 capital improvement projects. And in some cases, it might be 2 to 3. In some cases, it's 3 to 4. But what I found, Gabe, is that clubs tend to want to do capital improvement projects every 2 to 3 years.
Okay.
And so I know that sounds like maybe that's a lot of projects. Mm. But if you go back and think, a club manager out there, if you're a director, if you think back about the projects that the club wants to complete, it really does look at every 2 to 3 years as doing some sort of improvement. I'm not talking about deferred maintenance where you're replacing irrigation pipes. I'm talking about something new, an improvement, a new facility, a new amenity, mm-hmm. That will really, bring value to your club. And I think that the best way to do that, Gabe, is through a long-range planning committee. And I think having a focus of that committee that really understands your members' wants and needs, that understands the market and what potential members are going to want to look for in joining a club, and also understanding the club's mission is really important.
Sure.
And so I think for that committee, identifying those improvement projects and the costs associated is critical to being able to put your plan together.
Yeah. We hear a lot of about trends and things on this show, and I'm just curious if you've heard of any interesting projects, any capital improvement projects that clubs have planned that just caught your attention or thought were a little bit outside the box.
Well, I think that everyone is probably very well aware of some of the trends in our industry in terms of wellness, fitness, family-related activities. And I think that, just understanding that clubs don't operate the way that they did 25 years ago in terms of being a male-dominated golf facilities. And there are very few clubs that can operate that way and be successful.
Sure.
So I think that, thinking outside the box in terms of, if you're an off-season facility where you have, weather issues, having golf practice facilities and simulators, I think are very important to keep your members engaged throughout the entire season.
Right.
And I think that, coming up with more modern fitness facilities and amenities, a lot of clubs are doing things like bocce ball, where it's just an easy game, it's a social game, and it keeps the members engaged in a very social setting.
Yeah, I like the way you talked about there in terms of simulators. We haven't heard much about that on this show, but I'm a huge proponent of those, especially being in Florida. It's a hot summer this summer that we're having, just like every other summer. And it's nice to just be able to play some interesting courses inside when you're living in Florida. And that happens the exact same way up north in the wintertime. So I love
Absolutely.
That. Absolutely. Yeah. Well, let's move on to point three here in terms of what people need to set up for their long-term capital planning.
So once they've got those costs identified, Gabe, what clubs need to do is they need to figure out where their capital cash is coming from. And so, there's really 4 ways that clubs can generate capital cash without going to assessments and debt. And I like to call those, Gabe, the capital levers.
Mm-hmm.
And what those are, number one, is any operating surpluses or operating profits that the club would generate that would flow into the capital account. The second one would be your net initiation fees or your net transfer fees. And so anytime that there's a sale of membership, you would take that initiation fee and then minus out any member's equity, and those funds would flow to your capital account as well.
Mm-hmm.
The third one of those, Gabe, is capital dues. And right now, about 2/3 of clubs in our country are charging some form of capital dues.
Mm-hmm.
And capital dues are either monthly or annually, but they're designed to supplement the capital account, because what we find is that initiation fees in most cases are not enough to fund the capital program.
Right.
And they're also very variable. So you can't, mm-hmm. they're hard to count on. It's 1 year you might sure. take in 15 members, the next year you might take in 30.
Right.
So capital dues are really just supplements that line. And then the last one, Gabe, which not a lot of clubs really think about, is membership growth.
Mm-hmm.
And this is what I call the great multiplier, because the growth level of each category minus your attrition is going to determine the future initiation fees and the capital dues lines. And being able to project those, all of those things out over the 10-year period will tell your club, here's our trajectory and here's how much capital income that we're taking in over that 10-year period.
Yeah, I love the way the analogy you use there in terms of levers, because you can really see, you know, what happens if you were to pull this lever or that lever. Is there one in particular that you find is a better strategy, or is it really different for each club?
It is going to be different for every club, Gabe. And typically when we're working with clubs, what we like to do is we like to do a comparison against where the industry is. And in some cases, what we find is there's huge opportunities in one of the four levers. Mm-hmm. For example, we'll work with a club and we'll see that maybe they have no capital dues, and the average club in that area or for that particular size maybe has capital dues of $100. Right. And when you point that out, you might be able to say, you know, is your club willing to make a move on that particular lever? Mm-hmm. And you show them what the 10-year effect is going to be if you do that. Right. But at the same time, Gabe, you have to combine every one of the four and determine how each would impact your capital dues line. For example, if you have membership growth of 5% versus 2%, you can show a club that if they're able to focus on that particular strategy and get to that 5%, here's what it's going to mean in combination with a capital dues line of X or a transfer fee line of X.
Yeah, that's super interesting to me, because I'm probably the opposite of a numbers guy, but this stuff is so important, obviously, to really facilitate the long term plan of the club, and I think it's really needed. Do you find that most clubs have a good idea of what their competition is doing out there in terms of dues and whatnot, or have they conducted studies often?
I think clubs, for the most part, understand what their local competition does.
Yeah.
And there's tons of studies out there, and we all know that there's available resources through whether it's club benchmarking or other sources. But clubs typically will have their own area studies. Mm-hmm. And I know as a GM, I was constantly getting studies, and, you know, can you fill this out and can you fill that out? And so I think that the club boards in particular, and obviously board members, are very well connected to other, yeah, either board members or club members of other clubs. And so I think they've got a good idea on what the local market is doing.
Okay, good stuff. Well, let's move on to step four here in terms of the long-range capital planning. What is your step four, Eric?
So step four, Gabe, is just to factor in any other items that are going to affect your capital cash. So things like beginning cash balances, any existing debt service that the club might have, assessments receivable, those would all be examples of things that will affect capital cash. Mm-hmm. And so those all just have to be factored into to the model that you're putting together.
Perfect. Number five here on the list, identify the delta between capital requirements and available funds. What does that mean, Eric?
This is the scary one, Gabe. This is where the club has identified 10 years worth of capital expenditure replacements. And just to give you an example, what we found and what I found, and actually this is a number that came from Paul Mueller, who does this quite frequently, is that the average 18-hole golf club should expect somewhere between $800,000 and $1.2 million annually in replacements. Mm-hmm. Excuse me.
And that's in terms
and
of,
if
like
you look
golf
at that,
course equipment and whatnot and just, you know, facilities, what
exactly
does it cover?
Yeah. Yeah, golf course equipment, clubhouse equipment, FF&E, HVAC systems, all the things that are considered capital assets that will need to be replaced at some point. Mm-hmm. So you can look at that as a benchmark number, and you can ask your club and say, if I'm significantly lower than that in terms of what I'm putting towards our capital program, I may be underfunding, and we may get that deferred maintenance creep if I haven't done that reserve study. Mm-hmm. So understanding the 10 years worth of those expenses and then factoring in also the improvements, typically clubs are going to get a number that's well up into the millions. I mean, maybe it's $18, $20 million over that 10-year period. And the delta is the difference between those funding requirements and what your club is currently generating on your current trajectory. So if you currently have X number of members with X number of growth, and you factor in what the capital dues are, what the initiation fees are, then usually there's a large difference between what your needs are and what you're currently generating. And that's what we call the delta.
And that is usually not
a pretty picture when you present those numbers, Gabe.
Right.
But it is important, and it's important for club leadership to really understand that.
Right. And to really see what's next on your list. And we kind of touched on, but that's to what strategies and what levers they need to pull. Can you touch on that a little bit, Eric?
Yeah. And we talked about that a little bit before, Gabe, but this is where you take each of those four levers and you look at what strategies are available to you. And usually what we like to do is we like to look at, you know, what the industry is doing, as we said before, and we like to test scenarios. And it's going to be different at every club because, you know, maybe it's that the club had just recently increased their capital dues and it's not something that they're willing to do moving forward. But maybe the club has some room on initiation fees where it can maybe up those a little bit or put in installment payments. Mm-hmm. And maybe it has room on membership growth. Maybe the club is capped in membership. So there's all kinds of different things that clubs may or may not be willing to do. And I think it's our job as a consultant to present the options and what available funding options there are so that club leadership can determine the best one of those combinations that's going to work for them.
Yeah. Is there any particular software, some financial planning software or some modeling software out there that you use when you're trying to figure out which of these levers is the most viable?
Gabe, that's a really, really good question. And I will tell you, as a general manager, I spent countless hours sitting in front of an Excel spreadsheet trying to figure out modeling systems that would work to be able to figure out how these funding strategies are going to be developed. And what I can tell you is that yes, we have developed something with Blueprint. And when we knew we wanted to really help clubs with the system, I went out and hired someone to put together a model that is adaptable to any club. And what we do, Gabe, is we take 1 year's worth of data and we plug it into the system. It projects out over a 10-year period. And then we're able to use what we call a plug-and-play model where we can test available scenarios with each one of these levers. So we might say, well, what if we do this with capital dues? What if we do this with membership growth? How is that going to affect us? And what combination of those things is going to get us to completely fund our capital plan? And I will tell you, Gabe, you know, with the clubs that I've worked at, there are a few clubs out there that have developed their own internal models that mm-hmm. that do a good job for them. Mm-hmm. But it is probably rare that we actually find, you know, those models out there. Quite simply, they take hundreds and hundreds of hours to build.
Right.
And you really have to have a sharp CFO that's able to generate those. And so while there are some out there, I would say the majority of clubs really don't have the time or the expertise to be able to put them together.
Yeah, I can imagine. Yeah, definitely the time thing is probably huge. And so I want to invite listeners to check out Eric's website. It's blueprintclubs.com, blueprintclubs.com. Now let's move on to set point seven here on your list of long-term financial capital planning steps. What's number seven for you, Eric?
Gabe, number seven is probably my least favorite of the steps, but it has to be done in some cases.
And that is
it's not the lucky number seven, I guess. this one is the unlucky number seven, unfortunately, Gabe. But this is where you factor in the assessment and debt strategies where required. And I would encourage clubs to do this cautiously. Mm-hmm. And the reason why I say that is because clubs really need to understand the ramifications of these two strategies. And every club is going to do this a little bit differently. Some clubs are going to be perfectly fine with levying a large assessment, while other clubs, it's going to cause complete chaos. Mm-hmm. And clubs need to understand that in a lot of cases, and I would say most cases, Gabe, clubs should expect to lose somewhere, you know, between 10 and 20% of their membership with a large assessment.
Sure.
And the reason why that is, Gabe, is because, you know, so many of our members in clubs that when they pay that club bill, they're kind of on autopilot.
Right.
Bill comes every month. Mm-hmm. They pay it every month. Sometimes, you know, their spouse pays it or the secretary pays it, and they don't really think too much about it.
Sure.
Until you give them something to really think about.
Right.
And
yeah.
So
they start to do all the math, right? How many rounds per year am I playing and all that stuff, right?
In fact, I was listening to one of your conversations with, I think it was Steve Graves the other day, and we were talking about the value proposition of a mm-hmm. private club.
Right.
And you really don't want to get into that conversation
no.
with your members of, you know,
no.
is this a good value for me?
Right.
And so when you put a $3,500 or a $5,000 assessment on top of what they're currently doing, they really need to start to think a little bit and say, well, how much am I really using the club?
Yeah.
In fact, I can tell you, I got this letter one time, Gabe, where we levied a large assessment. And the member wrote to me and said, I think this project is exactly the right thing to do. And by the way, here's my resignation.
Yeah, right. Oh, my goodness. Yikes.
So even if they see the need for it, it may just not be the right thing for them. So I think what clubs need to understand is that if they're going to use that strategy, you really need to factor in, you know, how much attrition am I going to cause with this assessment, and factor that strategy in and make sure you build out that loss and how quickly you can recoup those members and what's your marketing strategy to get it back.
Are you finding that a lot of clubs are using that as a strategy right now, or because, you know, finance has been cheap, or what's going on?
I think most clubs are using that as a strategy simply because, Gabe, clubs are not long-term planning.
Right.
What they're doing is they're figuring out how to fund the next project.
Sure.
And when you figure out how to fund the next project, because you haven't been building the reserves and they haven't been thinking about this long-term and strategically, the only available option is to do an assessment and take out debt.
Yeah.
And that can work in some cases, but you need to make sure that you're looking at the complete plan. And that's why we like to look 10 years out, is because you have to make sure that revenues and expenditures match over time.
Yeah.
And if you're looking 3 to 4 projects out, then you can really get a true identity of what those needs are.
Yep. I think you're right on there, obviously. And well, let's move on to your last step then. Once we've figured out the factoring those assessment and debt strategies, what's next after that?
Next after that is to present what those funding options are. And Gabe, what we typically like to do with clubs is provide 3 to 4 different options. And we work with the clubs. Sometimes it's the GM, sometimes it's the CFO or the controller, sometimes it's the club president. Mm-hmm. And we try to figure out what clubs may be willing to do and what moves they might be willing to make. And then we can present the options in terms of strategy 1, strategy 2, strategy 3. And in some cases, we might take an assessment completely out of the picture and say, if you don't want to do an assessment, here's what you're going to do with dues and fees and growth.
Right.
And in some cases, we might say, well, if you don't want to take on any more members, here's what it's going to have to look like. So give 3 to 4 different options. And ultimately, Gabe, you know, your long range plan is only useful if it helps drive strategy.
Right.
And if you can get the club to commit to and unify around a capital funding strategy, then we've done our job, because then the club doesn't have to relook at it every single year. They can simply say, our focus is membership growth, or our focus is, you know, explaining to our members why we need to do this with dues and fees.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, that's perfect. So when do you recommend that clubs actually go through this process, Eric? Is it when they're completing a master plan or halfway through that? When do you think it's a good time to look at this?
Well, I think yesterday was a great time to look at it, Gabe.
Sure.
But I think that, you know, the reality is that it's not something that is done overnight. Mm-hmm. And it does require usually a little bit of assistance, which is why we're here. But I think that clubs naturally will go through this process when they're engaging in a strategic planning process.
Right.
Sometimes when they're considering a capital improvement project or a funding package, I think is a very natural time for clubs to be able to present out, you know, here's what our complete 10-year plan looks like, not just here's how we're going to fund this project and then we'll kick the can down the road for the next set of board members.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And that happens all too often, I think. So it's great that there's people out there like you guys that can step in and really help with this. If folks are interested in getting in touch with you, Eric, or they want to just explore the possibility of doing this long-range capital planning, what are the first steps for them?
Well, we do something, Gabe, that's complimentary, and we call it a capital opportunities assessment. And what we do is we take a quick bit of information from the club and we compare your club's capital program versus what the industry is doing.
Okay.
And it's a complimentary service that we offer. We have all kinds of charts and graphs that point out a few key things that the club might be able to identify in terms of where their biggest opportunities are.
Mm-hmm.
So I would say if clubs would like a quick look at that, they can certainly go to our website, and you mentioned that before, at blueprintclubs.com, or they can certainly contact me. My email is eric@blueprintclubs.com. They can look us up on LinkedIn. There's all kinds of ways to contact us. But that would be a great first step that I would think clubs would want to engage in before actually making the decision on whether building a long-range plan for their capital needs is appropriate.
Yeah, I feel like that's almost a no-brainer. So definitely invite clubs to check out your website there. And as I mentioned, your LinkedIn is really intriguing to me. I love the articles that you write over there, Eric. But blueprintclubs.com is the website. Definitely recommend folks check that out and at least go through that process with you, the complimentary assessment, and see if it's right for them.
Yeah, and we've also got, I think, 6 or 7 educational articles all relating to capital planning, Gabe, that if club managers or even board members would like to explore a little bit further about some of the best practices in the industry, I'd encourage clubs to really use those as resources. I also think that they're great articles for, you know, new board members as you're doing board orientations to get people to understand the importance of long-term capital planning.
Yep. Well said, Eric. Thank you so much for shedding light on this issue, and we appreciate you coming on Private Club Radio to speak with us today, Eric. Thank you so much.
Gabe, it was a pleasure being on your show. Please keep up the good work, and thank you for providing this great forum for us.
So there you have it. That's your tool in your tool belt, your weapon in your arsenal for this week. Thanks to Eric Gregory for providing that information on long-range capital planning. Great stuff there. I'm off to sunny Los Angeles, and I will see you back here next week on Private Club Radio. And until then, here's to your membership success.
Private Club Radio is brought to you by the Private Club Agency, the premier marketing and consulting firm dedicated to helping clubs increase and retain their membership. Visit privateclubagency.com to learn more.